Boy, it is a beautiful Sabbath day out there. Between
services, I saw a few folks out there, and I thought, why don't we just all move outside today? It's such a glorious time. It's nice now, but it's not good for a drought. And so we still need to pray for more rain. About 150 years ago, a couple of businessmen on the East Coast were lamenting that it looked like their country store was going to fail. And as they stood on the porch and talked to each other, the shorter one said to the taller one, he said, you know, it looks like this general store is not going to turn a profit, and I don't know how much longer it's going to last. I think it's about to wink out, was the words he used. And his friend said, well, you know, I can handle that. He said, if I could just think we could sell our inventory, whatever's left, said all I want out of a deal is if I could buy one of Blackstone's books of English law, said I think I'd like to study law. We only had enough money for that. And so they talked a little while, and pretty soon a wagon came riding down the road by their store and stopped. They could tell from the look of the horses and the wagon that it had been on the road a long time, and they didn't evidently have very much. The man stepped out and he came up to the two that were standing on the porch of a virtually empty store. And he said, look, we're trying to make our way west. We've run out of provisions. We don't have any food left. But we do have a good oak barrel in the back of the wagon. Do you think you could give us 50 cents for the barrel? Well, one of the men kind of sized up the wagon, looked at the gaunt face on the wife with pleading eyes, and fumbled around in his pocket, and it just so happened he had 50 cents. And he said, well, I suppose we could always find some use for a good oak barrel. And he gave the man 50 cents, and with that he bought a few provisions, made their way down the road. Well, the short partner said to the tall partner, that was about the dumbest investment you could have ever made. We didn't need an oak barrel, and we're almost bankrupt as it is. So they let the barrel sit on the porch the rest of that day, and finally, the gentleman went over and he thought, we'd better move it off the porch and move it inside. And that's when he looked down, he saw there were some papers in the bottom of the barrel. He pulled out some of the papers, and under them, they had thrown a large book, I guess, as ballast to keep it from tipping over inside the barrel. He pulled out the book, and wouldn't you know, it was Blackstone's Commentary on English Law. And that tall partner's name was Abraham Lincoln. He tells this story and says that was a turning point of his life, where he decided to study law. And they didn't do law back then the way we did now. You had to know that book. That was the book of law. Was that an accident, or was it God's divine providence? You know, I see all through my life evidence of God's promise that I will never leave you or forsake you. And even though we don't see Him, the Lord speaks to us in a number of ways. God speaks to us through His Word. He speaks to us through Christian counsel. He speaks to our hearts through His Spirit. And one of the ways God speaks to us is through providence. Now, the word providence is a combination of a couple of words, pro, meaning before, and video, which is where you get the word video, and it means to see. God sees things before, and He can also miraculously arrange circumstances so that He's working out His will in our lives all the time. As that famous verse we often read, Romans 8:28, and we know that all things work together for the good of those who love God and who are the called according to His purpose. All through our lives there's providence, and it's going to be interesting when you get to heaven and you can play the divine DVDs that the angels have archived. I don't know what it is, but they got something where we're going to be able to see the records of how the Lord has daily intervened in our lives to protect us, to teach us, to guide us, sometimes to chastise us because He loves us, but how the providence of God has worked in our lives. Without that knowledge, we're really flying blind. It's like trying to drive through a thick fog with a pen light. We don't know what's going to happen 1 minute from now. But if we know that we are in the vehicle with someone who has the wheel that can see through it, It makes a big difference. They've developed some new gear for pilots that is absolutely astounding. It's a dashboard, started with the military, but now it's available for private pilots. It's a virtual 3D windshield. So when you look out your windshield, the weather can be completely fogged in, but you will see superimposed on your windshield where the airport is, how far away it is, how far to the ground, the runway, other traffic that might be in the area. I mean, it has become so sophisticated that once you flip the switch, all of a sudden you're completely blanked out in the fog. All of a sudden you can see that there's stuff going on all around you that you are oblivious to. If we could flip the spiritual switch right now, you would find there are angels in this room, that God has a divine plan so sophisticated we can't even comprehend it. I mean, you think about all that God has to have work together with every molecule and atom and the timing of it all for his providence to be worked out. But nothing is too hard for the Lord. He has a plan for our lives. You can read in Jeremiah 1:5, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I sanctified you, and I ordained you a prophet to the nations." God has a plan for every life. A coincidence is very different from providence. A coincidence is a sequence of events that, although it seems accidental, it actually can be planned. Sometimes it's more than you might think. Providence means that God didn't just create the world and then walk off and leave it. That's sort of deism. Providence means that God is intricately involved in what's happening in our lives every day. I'm going to share with you a number of stories from history and several personal experiences, just why this subject's important to me, and hopefully it'll encourage you, and you'll remember some examples of God's miraculous providence in your life. You ought to have a prayer journal where you write some of these things down, because when you're discouraged, you can open it up, and it will encourage you and remind you that all things are working together for good. Sitting at my desk, going through my mail, and going through the work, I saw a name that had been on my desk for several days, somebody I needed to call. They were supporters of the ministry, and they made a very generous contribution, and I thought, really need to call them and thank them, but they weren't expecting it, and I had so many other things that had to be done, I put it off for several days. Finally, Karen and I went off to do, with the family, some preaching and take a little vacation time down in the country of Belize. Did a revival series in the mountains there, worked with a radio station, and they then took us down to this very remote spot. You know, we've been waiting for a chance to get away. And this was really nice because it's sort of, the end of the country. You go down dirt roads before you get to this resort, and we're going to spend a couple of days on the beach scuba diving, and we thought that would be wonderful. So finally, get settled in. The boys are doing their thing. Karen and I are together. And you know, I don't like going to crowded beaches. For a number of reasons. It can be distracting. And, I won't go into it. Anyway, if I'm going to get in a bathing suit, I just assume there aren't a lot of people around. I know it's hard to believe for someone that used to run around with nothing on, but that's the way I am now. And so Karen and I are finally, we're on the beach, quiet lapping waves, by ourselves. I think, alone at last. The vacation has begun. And all of a sudden I hear this man and this woman talking, and I open my eyes and I look up. And the man says to his wife, "Honey, well, you look at that. There's Doug and Karen Batchelor." We sat up and we started to visit with them. And lo and behold, it was this couple that I was supposed to call before I left that I'd never met before. And they were trying to get away also. And here you got these Seventh-day Adventists. We ended up spending, they were staying at the same place we were staying at. And ended up becoming friends. It turns out that they were going through some things and maybe needed a pastor in their lives right then. And we realized this was not an accident. This is the providence of God. And those things happen all the time. Where the Lord, and it's in little things. I remember one time I was on a trip traveling. And my cell phone is very important to me when I travel. I have to stay connected with the office and things going on and the family. This is before I figured out Skype. And I had an odd phone, a Motorola back then. I'd forgotten to take my phone charger, and I'd left it on the flight. And the battery was dead when I landed because it was searching for a signal the whole flight. So I get to the hotel, and I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't be this whole weekend without a phone. And I just prayed and said, Lord, I don't know how I'm going to figure this out. I got meetings right away. I don't have time to go find a phone charger. I'm going to need the phone. And so I prayed, and then I sat down at the desk, and I looked, and I saw over at the wall, there was a little black device plugged in. And I said, that looks just like my phone charger. And I went over, and I unplugged it. It was a phone charger, and there was no phone attached to it. Someone had left their phone charger plugged in to that hotel room, and the maid had left it there. And then I thought, could it be? You know, they all have different plug-ins. At least they did back then. I thought, any chance this will be the same size for my phone? And it was. Little things like that that tell me that God answers prayer. Now, I'm going to tell you one more story, and I've got a witness here. I was rushing from a rental car back to catch a plane. I was late. And I use a satellite GPS thing, an external satellite GPS to drive around. I like the bigger screen than what they have on the phones. And anyway, so had the suction cup mounts it to my dashboard and had it all plugged in. As I get to the airport, I'm returning the rental car. I'm putting my laptop away in my notes and take the GPS. I wrap it up and I put it away and I run for the plane. When I get into the airport, it just occurred to me I left the suction cup stuck inside the car. I was so discouraged. I had so much to be thankful. But, you know, one little thing like that will really depress you. And I thought, oh, I tried not to forget anything. I got the plane, and I was thankful. I couldn't go back and look for it. I would have missed my flight. And I don't even know why I thought that, but that was bothering me. And the next day, we're at staff meeting. Pastor Ross, John Quitzevite, and the rest of the staff from Central Church at that time. I don't even know why I brought it up. I said, oh, man, I'm bummed. You know, I left my GPS. I love that GPS. I left the suction cup stuck in the car. They'll never send it to me. And John Quitzevite says, well, that's odd. He said, I bought a piece of, and John can fill it in, a used luggage at a Salvation Army thrift store. Is that right? Where you at, John? He's way back. You remember that? Yeah. All right, got a witness. And he said, and it was empty. $2, I think you paid for the suitcase. He said it was empty, but when I opened it up, there was a GPS suction cup in the bag. Well, I guess a whole GPS, but it had the suction cup. I said, will you bring that by? What are the chances? It was the exact same model as mine, and it worked. And it continued working till the GPS broke sometime later. But when these things happen, do the math. What are the odds? You know, there are a lot of examples of divine appointments that God makes for us. And sometimes we may not even know why. I heard one story we used as an amazing fact that is actually based on a verse. Peter had told the temple authorities, of course our master pays the temple tax. But he hadn't been asking Jesus that. And then Jesus said, Peter, what were you talking to them about? Oh, they were asking about taxes. And what did you tell them? Oh, I said, of course we pay the temple tax. And Jesus said, well, let's make sure we keep our word. He said, Peter, I want you to go to the sea. I want you to get your hook, not a net, get a hook, throw the line in, you're going to catch a fish. When you pull that fish in, there'll be a piece of money in its mouth. Take that money and go pay the tax. Now, have any of you ever had that happen before, out fishing? Isn't that a miracle when that happens? Especially if what the fish has in his mouth is exactly what the IRS needs. That's what really, it could have been any phone charger, but it was a phone charger that I needed, or it was a GPS suction cup that I needed. God seems to supply what you need when you need it. There was a man named He was Joe Richardson. He lived in Bona, Texas. And he had lost a graduation ring from this technical institute 22 years earlier, some Marines on a weekend fishing trip were fishing in Ray Washburn Lake there in Texas, and they caught a big bass. And when the bass got into the boat and it was flopping around, a piece of gold fell out of its mouth. The soldiers saw that. It was an 8-pound fish. They got some mosquito spray and some WD-40 and a toothbrush that was in their tackle box, and they scrubbed it off a little bit, and they could see there was an inscription inside the ring of someone named Joe Richardson. And so they had their smartphone right there in the boat. They went and began to do a search for the area in the town, and there were two Joe Richardsons, and the second one they called, they said, any chance that you lost a graduation ring from United Technical Institute in this lake? They said, is this a joke? They said, no, we're out here fishing. He said, yeah, 22 years ago, I lost it while I was skiing out in the lake. And they arranged a meeting at a local Dairy Queen, and it was his ring. And of course, that made the news, and yeah, there's the ring right there. Took a picture of Amazing Facts. What are the chances? Of course, it made him wonder how many fish the ring had been through by the time he finally got it, that something like that would happen. We see examples all the time of God's providence. You ever had an experience of the right person being in exactly the right place at the right time? I'll never forget this. This is one of the things that always rattled me when I thought I was an atheist. I was 16 years old in New York City by myself. My mother had moved to England. My brother and family were in Florida. I had nowhere to stay. And I had one friend in New York I used to go to school with named David McLean. And we were good friends. Matter of fact, he was buddy with me first time I ran away from home. And I thought David would let me stay with him, but I don't know his number. So I thought, well, I'll go to the phone booth and see if I can call him. And I got the New York, I don't know if any of you remember the days in New York City actually had phone booths. I don't know if there's any left. They all had phone books. And the New York City phone book has got a lot of phone numbers. And there's a lot of Irish names in New York City. And I went to the McLean section. And there were pages and pages. And it was in his parents' name, and so I thought, this is hopeless. And so I was in despair, and I just didn't even know what to do, and I'm in the phone booth. And I just squatted down in the phone booth and leaned against the door, and I thought, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go? Do I spend the night here in the phone booth? Now, there's 8 million people in New York City, at least there were back then. Right when I was having this little tantrum, David McLean walked by the phone booth. I started pounding on the door. He heard the noise, and he looked at me. First, he didn't recognize me. He thought, who's this maniac that's squatting down in a phone booth pounding? I came out and said, David, David, David. The Lord worked that whole thing out. Now, that's happened to me with two different people in New York City where I didn't know where I was going to stay, and at the right moment, the person I needed walked across the street or walked by. You ever had these divine appointments? The whole nation is looking for Elijah. And then suddenly, Obadiah, everybody's looking high and low for Elijah. Obadiah's out looking for food, and suddenly Elijah appears. He says, where have you been? Right there. Well, it was God's timing. He showed him just the right place, the right time. He appeared to them. God does a lot of miracles all the time to bring us to the right people at the right moment in our lives. Sometimes we might not realize it. It might be an opportunity to witness. I was on the phone yesterday. This is a smaller example. I go through this ritual. I have satellite radio came with my car, but I don't like paying full rates. So whenever it expires, I call to cancel. Oh, I forgot the price went up because they raised the price, you know. I call to cancel, then they give you this discount price again. Gets it under $10. And so I'm on the phone going through the ritual, and the lady says, so you're in California. And I know this is a calling center somewhere. And I said, yes, and where are you? I just felt impressed to ask. She hesitated. She said, I'm in Manila. I said, oh, I'll be there in a couple of weeks. I'm going to be preaching. I'll be at the Caneta Astrodome. I'm doing some meetings. Really? What do you do? I'm a pastor. said, do you have the internet in front of you right now? She says, I do. I said, type in amazing facts. So she promised that she's going to look it up and made it sound like she might come to our meetings. Is that an accident that she answered the call, that I asked where she's from, and that I'll be in that city preaching the gospel in a few weeks? This happened yesterday. These things happen all the time. Because God is wanting us to know that He is real, that He intervenes in our lives. He protects us. He provides for us. Some of you have heard the story of the church that was moved by the hand of God. There was this Methodist group back in North Carolina. They wanted to build a church there in the middle of town. And they found an ideal piece of property. And this is like in 1884. And the man they wanted to buy the church from said, look, he was not a believer by any means. He says, I'm looking to sell my land, but I'm not selling it to a church. That is a waste of the best piece of property in town. We need to put some kind of prominent building here that's going to, you know, be good business for the community. Not another church. And other people raised the price. He said, no, I'm not selling it to the church. And they said, okay. Well, they finally settled on a low-lying piece of land that wasn't too far from the water's edge there by the bay. And they built a humble but a sturdy church, Methodist congregation. And not long after they built their church, as sometimes happens there on the coast of North Carolina, a hurricane came through. And with the hurricane, the water rose. And when the water rose, there was a storm surge. It washed over the banks and into the community, and all the low-lying land began to get flooded. But this church, because it had just been built and they hadn't really furnished it yet, was like a large ark. And they had built it up on some brick piers. The church actually rose up out of the water and floated away. But it didn't float out to sea. The storm surge was coming in. It began to float into town. And people that woke up that next morning that looked through their battened down hatches could not believe what they saw. But there was this fairly new church that was floating down the street. Some good neighbors, as the storm began to subside, they got out and they tried to tie off the church. But it looked like it had a mind of its own. It broke the ropes, continued to, church is pretty big, hard to tie off. Continued to go right up Main Street, and then just like there was a hand, when it got to Main Street, it took a left turn and began to float up until it came to the spot where the lot was. It swirled around a few times and settled directly in the middle of the lot, though it was a little bit killywantered from where they had originally planned it. When the water subsided, the man that owned the property, he came to the leaders of the church, and he handed them the deed. He said, I'm not even going to sell it to you. That church is still there today. They call it the Providence Church. Now, don't you wish it had been that easy for us? We're still praying for a miracle. You know, and sometimes the Lord providentially provides food and water just when you need it. I can tell you stories about when I was in my hitchhiking days. I had a number of experiences. One in particular, out of money. I was stuck in Los Angeles, hitchhiking, got stuck in a very dangerous part of town full of gangs. As I stood at the on-ramp with a girlfriend. Sorry, it wasn't Karen. But they were throwing things at us, saying terrible things, flicking their cigarettes at us. I thought, we're not going to make it through the night if we stay here. So they had these all-night restaurants back then. And so we went to this all-night restaurant, and I had no money. But I played the flute out front, and somebody on their way out, it's like 1 a.m, they gave me 20 cents. That was enough back then for 2 cups of coffee. I know that's hard to believe. I don't know if there's anyone here who remembers a chain of restaurants called Sambo's. You remember that? 10 cents for a cup of coffee. Went in there, got 2 cups of coffee, and sat there and just drank coffee, waiting for the sun to come up, and read a Bible. Had a little Bible. Just read back and forth. Got bad cramps from reading, drinking coffee, no food. Went into the restroom, and which happens a lot after 18 cups of coffee. And I prayed. And I said, Lord, we need food. And you said here in your word that if a son is hungry and he asks for food, you'll give him food. And I said, I don't know how you're going to give us food. We have no money. There's no one even to panhandle from here in the restaurant. But I'm asking, could you give us something to eat? I walked back out. My girlfriend was smiling. I said, why are you smiling? She said, while you were in the bathroom, the waitress came up and said, can I take your order? And I said, we're just going to have the coffee. She said, no, I'm buying your dinner tonight. What do you want? And so the waitress said, anything on the menu is on me tonight. Right after I prayed for food. I picked up a hitchhiker one time. He was stuck out in the middle of the desert. And he told me how he had found the book called Bible Readings for the Home Circle in jail. He had gotten released from jail. It was a minor thing for hitchhiking on the freeway. He said, I'm a believer. He said, I'm just trying to get to California. He's out in the middle of the desert. I picked him up. He saw the Bible on my dashboard. He said, you're a Christian? I said, yeah. He said, you know, I've been reading this book called Bible Readings for the Home in jail. He said, it's just amazing. It answered so many questions. I said, really? I said, I've heard of that book too. It is a great book. And we had a bite, and I was almost ready to go to sleep. This was between Arizona and LA. I picked him up. I was wide awake. All the way to Los Angeles, where my mother lived at the time. I drove him, which is where he was going. That was not an accident. And the neat thing about the story was he told me, you know what happened just before you picked me up? I couldn't get a ride. He wasn't even at an on-ramp. He said, and I prayed and said, Lord, I just need something to eat. He said, a truck going from LA to Phoenix carrying oranges hit a bump and three oranges fell out right after he prayed. God does things providentially. He provides food. He provides water. Some of you have heard the story called The Miracle of Andersonville. Now, at the conclusion of the Civil War, things got pretty desperate for the South. Not only did they have no food for their own soldiers, they definitely had no food for their POW camp that was there in Atlanta. Notorious place called Andersonville. It was built to hold 10,000 men. By the end of the war, they had 30,000 men crammed in this spot. Men could barely find a place to lay down, just like sardines, shoulder to shoulder. Some had to actually sit up so others could lay down. There was no food. They had no shelters for the men. And what was really bad is the only water supply for the entire camp of prisoners was a foul creek that ran under the fence on one side and out the other side. It actually turned into a virtual swamp in the summertime. Before the creek even ran into the camp, it ran through the guards area with all their livestock, and then it ran into the POW camp. Of the 30,000 men that were eventually there, 13,000 died. These are young, healthy men. 13,000 of them died from dysentery, malaria, disease, more even than the starvation, though many of them starved. Just so you'll know how bad this was, Lincoln was very forgiving at the end of the Civil War, and nobody was tried for war crimes except one person. The warden of Andersonville was hung because of what he did. It was that bad. Well, one summer, the men in the wintertime had no shelter. They just had almost no clothing. They were freezing to death. The summer, I don't know if you know what it's like in, I've been in Georgia where it's, you know, 4 degrees. It's amazing how cold it can actually get there, considering they're further south than we are. So freezing in the winter. Summertime, I don't know if you felt 100 degrees with 90% humidity and no shelter, but it's pretty miserable. And it got so bad, the camp was filthy, swarming with mosquitoes, and they were all living in a virtual sewer. And the men realized they were all going to die. Their friends were all dying around them. They said, we need to pray for rain. Well, the sky was totally cloudless. They hadn't had rain in weeks. And they all got down, and those that were there say that you would never forget what it looked like to see 15,000 men all kneeling and pleading with God for water. And then suddenly the clouds began to gather and got thicker and thicker and darker, and lightning began to flash. The clouds broke, and they had what they call a gully washer. You know, you have a regular rain, and then you have a gully washer rain. It means it rains so hard that it washes out your gutters. And the rain just became in torrents. It gave them a chance. They were dancing. They were praising God. They were washing their clothes. They were drinking. It flushed the camp out, at least temporarily. And in the midst of the storm, another miracle happened. There was a bolt of lightning that struck the ground in the middle of the camp. Now, the rain was one miracle. Another miracle was the lightning. Another miracle was that no one was killed by the lightning, because the camp was so crowded, there was no spot that wasn't just jammed with people. And then the final miracle was that when the storm was over, the place where the lightning hit the ground, a spring opened up and water began, clear, cold water began to permanently bubble up out of the ground. And you can go today to where Andersonville Camp was, better known at the time as Fort Sumter, Camp Sumter, and you'll see a sign by a spring called Providence Spring. And this whole story is there about how this spring opened up in the answer to prayer. Remember in the Bible when Samson had his great victory fighting, killed 1,000 Philistines. He smote them hip and thigh. You always wonder what that means. And then he was dying from thirst. He said, Lord, you've given me this great victory. His own men had fled and left him alone. He's in the middle of the valley. He's surrounded with those who are defeated. The Philistines had left. He's all alone. And like Jesus, he said, I thirst. Lord, do you give me this big victory and let me die of thirst? And it says that God opened a place in the ground and water came out. And he drank and his spirit came again. That also happened for Hagar when Ishmael was dying of thirst. They either opened the place or he revealed the place where there's water. How many times have you seen how God providentially provides? And God providentially protects. Now, we could be here for a long time, and I could tell you story after story, war stories, about how God miraculously protected people because he had a special plan for them. Isaiah 54:17. No weapon that is formed against you will prosper. And every tongue that shall rise against thee in judgment, you will condemn. No weapon that is formed against you will prosper. You know, when God's people went off into battle, it never seemed to matter what the numbers were. If God's people were in battle, do you know David never lost a battle? The numbers didn't seem to matter. Strategy sometimes seemed very strange. But when God fights for you, you and the Lord are always a majority. And it's like David said, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil, because thou art with me. I think it was George Whitefield who said, I am immortal until my work is done. His young lieutenant was assigned to head up into the territory of Canada with 1,500 English troops back before the Revolutionary War. And they were ambushed by French and Indian forces from the woods as they were walking up this valley, and just they mowed them down. It was withering fire. Now, the English back then, they had not yet abandoned the old European style of warfare, which was really the most ridiculous thing. I mean, here you've got these British troops, and they would all line up in rows, and they'd fire methodically in order, and they're wearing red coats, which are so easy to see. And they were just being picked off. And, of course, the thing they wanted to shoot more than anything was the officers. The only officers rode on horses. So it was really easy for the French and the Indians to spot them. And all the officers were shot off their horses except for one. And the marksman continued. The chief of the Indian sharpshooters kept saying, you specialize in taking out the officers. Because when you smite the shepherd, the sheep scatter. And three times they saw that horses were shot out from under this one lieutenant, but he would grab another horse from an abandoned horse from another officer. He'd get back on it again. And they kept firing at him, and they thought for sure, I hit him. How come he isn't falling? And finally, as the story goes, the chief said, don't fire at that one anymore. The great spirit's watching over him. We'll bring a curse on ourselves. Well, eventually, that lieutenant riding around, he rallied the troops, and they retreated. This battle is recorded in history, but here are the words from young George Washington after the battle. Word was received there was such a massacre of the English troops. word got back to the family, he was among the officers slain. And he wrote, "I have heard since my arrival at this place a circumstantial account of my death and dying speech, and I take this early opportunity of contradicting the first and of assuring you that I have not as yet composed the latter." Rumors had reached that he had made a dying speech and had died. "But by the all-powerful dispensations of Providence, I have been protected beyond all human probability or expectation. For I had 4 bullets through my coat, and 2 horses shot out under me, yet escaped unhurt, although death was leveling my companions on every side." Did the Lord have a plan for him? And you know, when something like that happens, people say, "But what about the others? Why didn't God protect everybody?" You know, someday I think we'll have the answers for that. And we don't know. I mean, there are reasons, but you can also see that for whatever his reasons are, sometimes the Lord does something extraordinary to watch over somebody because he has a special work for them to do. There's just so many different stories of how God has protected people through history that I don't think I'm going to have time to share them all with you. A couple of more that I think are encouraging. Psalm 108, verse 8, it says, "Oh, that men would praise the Lord for his goodness and his wonderful works to the children of men." In 1942, the U.S. and Japanese were preparing to engage in the deadly naval battle of Savo. That was a fight for Guadalcanal. And there was young Elgin Staples, who was a signalman third class. He was on the USS Astoria. The boat took a direct hit and exploded. They were told to get their life preservers. He found one at the last minute, and he was rescued. I'm making a long story short. When he was rescued, he decided to keep his life belt because so many men had been lost that he was very thankful for it. Got back home on leave, took it with him, found out that while he was at war, his mother had gone to work for the Firestone Company, and her job was to make the life belts for the Navy. And he pulled out his life belt. He said, "So you're making life belts like this?" She said, "Yes." She said, "And all of them are marked with a serial number by the inspector who makes the life belt." She said, "Let me see it." She looked at it, and lo and behold, it was a life belt that she had made and inspected. Wouldn't that want you to be careful with your quality control? You ever heard it said, the life you save may be your own? It may be your son. Providential timing. There's a story in the Bible, 2 Kings chapter 8, verse 1. How many of you remember the Shunammite woman? Remember, Elisha raised her son back to life. First of all, Elisha promised she'd have a son. So this boy is born miraculously. He later dies. Elisha comes and resurrects the son. Well, against that backdrop, Elisha comes to her and he says to the Shunammite woman, never tells us her name, just calls her the Shunammite woman. He said, "The Lord has told me a famine is coming for 7 years, just like the famine of Joseph. And he said, I recommend that you go to some other country where there'll be food, but there's going to be a famine in Shunem. Take your family with you." So she listens to the prophet. She knows the words of Elisha never fail. She prepares, in advance. She goes and lives down in the country of the Philistines where they had still water that was coming down from the hills, and they could farm as they did in Egypt. 7 years she spent down there. Finally, she gets word the famine's over. She goes back home. But other people now have moved into her land and moved into her house. Remember, she built a little room on top of her house for Elisha. And now she's got to go to the king and intercede and say, "Can I please have my land back? This was our family." She's not an Israelite. She's a Shunammite. It's going to be hard to get your land back from someone who is actually an Israelite. So she's praying that God will show her mercy with the king. Well, at that very moment that she goes in to see the king, between cases, Gehazi, the servant of Elisha, is talking with the king of Israel, and the king of Israel is saying, tell me the stories about Elisha. Tell me, and this is 2 Kings chapter 8, verse 4, so please tell me the great things Elisha's done. And it happens as he's telling the king how he had restored a dead boy to life, that there was the woman whose son he had restored to life, appealing to the king for her house and for her land. And Gehazi said, "My lord, O king, this is the woman, and this is her son, whom Elisha restored to life." And when the king asked the woman, she told him, so he appointed a certain officer and said, restore all that was hers and all the proceeds of the field in her land from the day that she left until today. Now, wouldn't you like to have that kind of relationship with the Lord? Have you ever had answers to prayer like that where the timing was just amazing? Another story. Take a little break. Personal experience. 25 years, more than that, ago, I, believe it or not, worked with the Heritage Singers. And while I was working with the Heritage Singers, my father owned an airline back then. It was called Capital Airlines. He owned a couple of airlines. He had part interest in Western Airlines. He owned Capital Airlines. And the Heritage Singers were going to take a trip to Europe. We had some invitations, but that's expensive. And Max said, Doug, Max Mays, he said, Doug, no chance your dad would give us a deal on a flight to Europe. That would save us a fortune. You know, we are a nonprofit, so forth. We can give him a receipt. I said, well, that's not like my dad. He's not much of a believer. It's kind of a long shot. He said, well, let's pray about it. Well, just, I was going back to see dad on a family vacation, so I went to see dad. My dad is so hard to talk to. And so he comes home. He's had a martini. He's sitting in the den by himself, and I come in. I sit down with him, and he's channel surfing, and I'm praying. I'm saying, oh, how do I do this? He's always in a bad mood when he drinks. I said, all right, Lord, well, I'm not sure what to do. And while my dad's channel surfing, all of a sudden, he goes to this channel. There are the Heritage Singers singing on TV. I'd never seen them on TV. They were on Trinity Broadcasting back then. They had just done some programs. I said, Dad, wait. He said, what? I said, see that group? Yeah. I said, that's the group I'm traveling with right now. Really? They're on TV? I said, sure. I said, and you know, they're willing to advertise for you all over the world. I said, you know, they're called the Heritage Singers. They might even do some, you give them a little sponsorship, give them a few free tickets, and they'd probably advertise. So that sounds like a good idea. Well, it turns out that he did. He flew them several places as long as he had the airline. Was that an accident? At the moment, I'm praying about, how do I cover, oh, Lord, I don't know what to, boom, they're on TV. What are the chances? God does these things for us all the time to show us that he's real. You ever have a providential impression that didn't make any sense? And the Spirit of the Lord says to Philip, Acts chapter 8, verse 29, go near and join thyself to this chariot. And Philip ran thither to him and heard him reading from the prophet of Isaiah. He's reading Isaiah chapter 53 about the Messiah, which was Philip's favorite subject. What are the chances? And right then he says, do you understand what you're reading? Oh, it's difficult. Why don't you hop in the chariot and help me understand? I remember I was driving back from some evangelistic meetings in Paradise, California. And it was winter time. But I wanted to go to Covelo. And even though it was like a 3-hour drive across, it was 3 hours if I crossed the dirt road on the mountains. But it was like 5 hours from Paradise to go the long way. I just really wanted to go home. And I thought, I can't get across the pass now because it's winter. It's going to be all snowed in. It's snowed in every winter. Probably except now because there's no snow. But I felt this impression that I should try. And I thought, that's going to be a waste of time. I'm going to get all the way up there and it'll be two hours out of my way to find out I'm not going to make it. And I couldn't shake the impression I was supposed to try. And so I said, all right, well, this is crazy because I'm going to get stuck up there in the snow. So I began to go, and I don't know if any of you have driven that road. It's Highway 162. It drives from like Corning, across the mountain, goes to Covelo, comes out on Highway. Karen's done it, but it's a very remote road. Most of it is dirt. And I'm not exaggerating. When you leave Pascanta, you go 60 miles to the next gas station. You don't want to have problems out there. And I rode, and pretty soon the snow started showing up, and then it started getting deeper and deeper. But I saw some tracks in the snow, and I thought, well, someone's made it across. So I kept going. And finally I got up, and I found out that there was somebody who had been stuck in the snow up there for days. Some German tourist in his Toyota two-wheel drive pickup truck, looking at a map, thought that he could get across to the coast this way. He got stuck. He had no radio. All of his possessions were in the car. And he was praying that someone would come down that road, even though there was nobody else on the road. Well, I thought the Lord impressed me to go that way because I was going to make it. But that I still had to turn around. But I had a winch on my truck and four-wheel drive. I pulled him out and followed him down to where he could go on his way, gave him some witnessing material. And I knew that the Lord had sent me down that road for that reason. I got home really late that night. But sometimes God impresses you, and then later you understand why. You know what I'm talking about? So part of God's providence is being open to it. Sometimes things might seem to go wrong, and we forget that God is working things together for our good. You remember reading in the book of Esther, just one of the great stories in the Bible. One night the king could not sleep. Little did the king know that Haman was coming to him with a death warrant for Mordecai to be signed. God kept the king awake, and he brought the musicians into play, but that didn't help. And by the way, this is Esther 6, verse 1 through 4. And finally the king says, well, nothing makes me more tired than when the scribe reads the Chronicles to me. And if you get tired reading the book of Chronicles, so bring in the scribe and read the Chronicles of what's been going on. The minutes of our meetings is what he's reading, board minutes. And so he's going through this monotone. He's telling the king, and there was this meeting, and we met with that official. This ambassador came, and the king is just starting to doze off. And then the scribe says, and there was an assassination attempt on the king's life. King sat up. And he said, and a man named Mordecai revealed the attempt. It was found to be true. The assassins were executed. And the king said to the scribe, anything in the notes here? Did we do anything for this fellow Mordecai? No, didn't do anything for the fellow that saved your life. King is thinking, wow, that's not very kingly of me. I wonder, I need to do something to reward this guy that saved my life. What shall I do? And right when he's thinking that, Haman comes in and he's getting ready to ask the king, can you please give me permission? I want to execute this fellow who's just been a real pain in my side. And the king, before he can tell him, he said, what shall be done for the man whom the king delights to honor? Well, Haman is thinking, who would the king want to honor more than moi? And he says, well, I'll tell you what I think you should do. See, Haman wanted to be the king, like the devil. He wanted the king's place. He said, I think that you ought to put him on the king's horse and put the king's robe on him and get the king's official to cry before him and put the king's crown on his head and parade him up the streets and say, thus shall it be done for the one whom the king delights to honor. And Haman's expecting the king to say, I'm going to do that for you. And instead he says, do everything that you've said, and I want you to be the official to lead him up the street for Mordecai the Jew. Now what are the chances that the king would have that revelation? Do you know the name God is not mentioned in the book of Esther? But you see God all through the providence, all through the book. The whole Bible is a story of the providential leadings of God. What are the chances that Moses would come by the well just when the girls need it the most, and those girls that need it the most, one becomes his wife, and he takes care of her father's sheep, and at the right moment he's at the burning bush. I mean, you just look at the providence of God all through the Bible. Nothing happens by accident, from the woman at the well to the things that happen in your life. You know, it tells us in the Word, we should not cease to praise God. Psalm 107, oh, that men would praise the Lord for His goodness and His wonderful works to the children of men. Nothing happens by accident. If you have surrendered your life to the Lord, all things work together for the good. Even things that may seem like they're a trial, God can work them out for good for those that love God, that are the called according to the purpose. And He's with us everywhere we go. Do you believe that, friends? So I thought it'd be good for us to close with our hymn, My Lord and I, number 456, and we'll have prayer when we conclude. Let's stand together as we sing.